people. It is the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlanzas off for another day broadcast. It's a lunch.
Yes. Did you already figure out you got your mom for Mother's Day?
Right? Oh, yeah.
You got all figured out?
Yeah, no, she's already put a request in. So we're,
that's good.
That goes.
She's not shy about what she likes and wants. And
No.
That's sometimes a good thing.
It's not that, that whole faked up kind of, oh, honey, that's so sweet.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, no. If I screw up, she will tell me. So she got to the point where it's now a matter of, all right, here's what I need.
I like that.
I do, too.
Really?
I just go by my own. You buy your own Mother's Day?
Well, then they pay me back.
How sweet is that?
Well, I get the money from them.
All right, cough it up, kids.
This is going to cost you $100. Mama needs a new purse.
She mugs her own children.
I can't take it anymore with getting things I don't want or just the wrong thing, even though I specifically tell them exactly what I want, and then they come back with something else.
My mom's so easy, just anything.
What are you saying? I'm hard?
She's
No, just my mom.
Stark contrast to the Judy story.
Believe me, I start by saying, don't give me anything. Just don't. It's not a big deal, but they insist. So
I want to just ask you a question. Because this is where the girls are different than the boys, in life. This is one of these biological realities. Right, there's the obvious, and then there's a couple of other behavioral things, and this is one of them. This is the old, oh, please, I didn't want a thing. Forget about me. And it is absolutely a trap. It is absolutely
a
snare. It's sort of like, it's like walking into a cage where you go, I'm going to get the cheese, and then the door slams.
Kind of true.
Right? I mean, what are you doing? We get it. I mean, after a while, you get it.
Because you mess it up once or twice, and you get bad feedback when you show up with nothing because she said,
you said, don't get me nothing. Don't get you nothing. I didn't get you nothing.
You have to read between the lines, buddy.
One time, my kids forgot my birthday. They didn't even They didn't even say happy birthday. I was livid.
Did you think
monster.
All day there was going to be a surprise party?
Oh, so as you can imagine, I was seething, and then it just exploded. Oh, they've never forgotten.
Did you
that.
Wait till like 12:01?
Oh, I waited till the next day.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
Frosty.
Showed them. Yeah.
Ooh.
So, yeah, don't give me anything for Mother's Day, kids. It's fine.
You know what yesterday was, don't you? Yeah. I've done that, though. I've forgotten birthdays before. Not my mom's, because it's a national holiday.
And I'm sorry, let me remind you, I have three kids. None of them remember.
Oh,
well,
boy.
There's always one that reminds the rest.
That's true.
So if that person forgot.
I don't know what happened that year, besides a nuclear war, because that would be the only thing, the only excuse I would have accepted.
Here we have 630. I'm good with a hug and a kiss and a happy Mother's Day, and that's about it. And I would be in that, in that camp, too.
You are a liar,
I'm in that camp.
Yes,
she knows she's not.
All right, hey, whoa.
It's the
love. Oh,
I want to feel the love.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this applies to you and 630. Here we go.
Okay, 630, listen up.
Yeah. All right. Now, your daughter's six.
Mm-hmm.
She gave you
a really elaborate card, which is gorgeous and all colored, and she spent time, and you can feel the love.
Yes, so you can feel it's very, very nice. There's
see,
why
picture
is there,
of me with like seven feet
tall legs. That looks like Hillary Clinton in there. Why does she have a picture of Hillary Clinton?
But the legs are really long. She got that part right.
Yeah, so that's true. That's all true.
Yeah. And then, she's talked about all the things she liked about it. I love when my mom cooks spaghetti. She teaches me how to read.
It's so interesting.
I like it when we go to Wishbone.
Do you have blonde hair there?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's light. It's lighter.
Does she know who her mom is?
Please.
And this is on CLTV too, by the way. This is really great. This is, the funny thing is that the legs, this is the perspective of kids, because that's all they see, until they're about like 10. All they see are legs.
They grab your legs.
Right? So it's like a thing. So it's just legs. Hey, but the interesting piece, I would like to ask you. And 630.
Sure.
Do you? Because, there's a father for this child.
That's true.
Who lives in your home.
That's right.
It's not always the case, I know. But in this particular case, it is.
It is.
Do you expect a gift from him?
Yeah, I do.
Aha!
Yes, do. Of course.
I do. Yes.
And
you did this to me. So what kind of a scale do you expect at a moment?
Yeah, I expect him to kind of go all out. My daughter can just make a card and give me a big kiss and make me feel love. That's it. Mm-hmm. And she's already done that today. But I feel like he should do something. Like he needs to buy a cake or,
a cake. No.
Some flowers.
No.
And,
Balloons?
Dinner.
Not balloons.
I like balloons.
Decorate a little bit, kind of Do like it up. Bobble, illustrate something.
Bobble. Some bobble-ish kind of thing.
Jewelry is nice. I appreciate jewelry. Sure.
Hold on. 630 called us. All right. Okay, now, there you go.
Please.
All right. That's the answer that we're looking for right here. All right. Hold on. Becky, you there? Becky?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good. All right. Becky, I'm going to ask you the same question. Now, do you have a... Is there a Mr. Becky in the picture here?
There is.
Uh-huh. I'm short on time here because I gave it to Aaron Blake from the Washington Post. But do you expect him to give you a gift?
No.
Becky, you are such a saint.
How old are the kids?
13, 10, 9, and 3 and a half.
Now, do you expect from the 13 and 9-year-old something?
No, not at all. No. I just want a hug and a kiss. And
you don't want anything from your husband. You don't want, and you're not lying to me.
No, not at all.
Okay. You are lying to, I've just checked it right now. Mm-hmm. I put you through the
lie detector through
the
test.
WGN lie detector test. And
your voice did not falter there at all.
Your husband doesn't have to in any way do anything for you on Mother's Day, and you're okay with it.
I'm totally okay.
Oh, my God. Are you really? I'm sorry you're married, because I'd literally drive over to your house right now. Thank you very much, Becky. I appreciate it.
Oh. You're welcome. Thank you.
Happy Bye. Mother's Day, Becky.
Yes, happy Mother's Day. Right. Wow.
She's like, give me a hug and a kiss and get out of here.
Sweetheart.
I've already gotten Anna to, it doesn't have to be any larger than 2 carats. That's what I have just gotten from Anna on this.
331, my husband always said, you're not my mother, so he doesn't have to do anything for your Mother's Day. Take that.
Don't you mean ex-husband? All right, here, Judy, why don't you tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom? Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Aaron Blake from the Washington Post is joining us, and we got to talk about Michael Cohen here, because the president, I don't know if you remember this, Aaron, from the campaign. Remember when the crowds used to chant, lock her up, lock her up? And that was always when the president was talking about pay-to-play schemes and that how it's illegal to actually curry favor or access to her when she was Secretary of State, or to the Clinton Foundation. What could she do? And now we got Michael Cohen is like, where's the lock him up?
Well, I think that's probably up to the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Attorney's Office there at this point. There's been a steady stream of information coming out this week having to do with people who paid Michael Cohen to do random consulting business for them shortly after the election. What's most notable about all this is that the things he was paid to do for them were not his areas of expertise, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
One of them was accounting. One of them had to do with healthcare policy. AT&T wanted him to navigate the telecom industry and the Trump administration, how that would work. It just seemed a little bit odd that they'd be paying this guy who, you know, one, doesn't have any government experience, wasn't technically on the Trump campaign, to basically help them with this new administration. And I think it just kind of lays bare what we all suspect happens behind closed doors when it comes to influence peddling and paying for access to people in positions of power.
Well, I guess what it's going to come down to, and the White House has become, you know, fairly well practiced at this, is they're going to have to distance themselves and say, well, nothing ever really happened. It's the same kind of response they had to the fact that there was a meeting at the Trump Tower with that Russian group, and that specifically the woman who now claims that she's, you know, she was an informer back to the Kremlin. You know, in June of 2016, they said, well, it never happened. Oh, it did happen, but nothing ever came of it. So it's not collusion. In this particular case, are they at this point, based on what we know, clear in saying, well, OK, if he did this, he did it on his own. We don't know anything about it. They never came to us.
Yeah, and I think that's the argument that they're putting forward. Rudy Giuliani was asked about this today and said that the president had no knowledge of Michael Cohen offering access in any way, shape, or form. You know, we don't have any reason to believe that Trump did sign off on this necessarily, and maybe he didn't even know about it, but I think it still reinforces that this kind of thing is happening in an administration that, you know, prided itself on the drain the swamp rhetoric from the campaign, and you know, this is maybe one of the more kind of blatant examples of somebody who didn't really have a whole lot of expertise suddenly being very much in demand, you know, basically because of their proximity to the president. I make the point in the piece that, you know, lawmakers and former White House aides often go on to pretty lucrative lobbying businesses after they leave government. But at least those people have worked in government, have relationships, have worked on certain issues that are important. They may have worked on accounting issues, on telecommunications issues, on healthcare policy. So they have something kind of concrete to offer their clients. In the case of Michael Cohen, there's just not really anything there to suggest that he actually has any of those things apart from his proximity to the president of the United States.
Was Novartis able to get a meeting with the president, though, in approximately the same time as Cohen was contracting with them?
Yeah, and that's the one. You know, I think with each of these cases, there's a little bit of a, you know, at least a suspicion of a reason of why they were seeking favor. Novartis did get that meeting. We don't know if it's because of the Cohen relationship. Novartis says that they had a meeting with Cohen and then basically terminated their relationship, but that they couldn't get their money back for some reason, which is weird.
Well, they had to pay him. Is this reporting correct? I mean, I know there's a lot of different sources here, but Aaron, is your reporting or the Washington Post reporting that they had to continue to pay him for either a 10-month or 12-month contract, even though they had dismissed him?
Yeah, and that may be the most difficult to swallow aspect of this. You know, whether the administration did anything wrong here, I think is one question. Whether these companies were engaged in kind of a pay-to-play situation is the other aspect. The fact that they would enter into this contract that would pay Michael Cohen $1.2 million and wouldn't have any kind of an out clause if he turned out to be, you know, not useful to them, that's not how these things are generally handled. And the idea that the lawyers at a very successful pharmaceutical company would allow for something like that to happen, it just doesn't really pass the smell test. And so we're seeing Novartis today actually basically kind of taking their medicine to use the wrong phrase here, you know, saying that they're embarrassed by this and it looks very bad, and it does.
Well, they acknowledge they did it. AT&T acknowledges they did it. Back to Novartis, though, which is fascinating because, all right, it's a big drug company, and the president had on the campaign trail threatened to, you know, change how prescription drugs are paid for by the federal government. And he's saying that, you know, the government's being ripped off by these drug companies. And so certainly it would be in everybody's best interests. And if you're Novartis, you're the CEO of Novartis, to, you know, to try to figure out where the lay of the land is there. Is that just campaign rhetoric? Does it really mean it? What does it mean for us? Who's he going to put in charge of the FDA and you know, whether it's, you know, Medicare or Medicaid, whatever it happens to be. So it is a really, I mean, the funny thing is that like a lot of these things, all of the pieces line up. And it's the one missing smoking gun item that connects it all. And whether you're looking at Russia or you're looking at this, and it's fascinating to me that when you look at all of this and you stop at some point, it's 6 months from now or 6 years from now or whatever, we're going to look back and go, oh, of course, whatever the outcome of that was, because it seems so obvious. As you know, Michael Cohen, who was always a tough guy, right? He was always telling everybody how powerful he was and how, you know, the president was right in everything that he's doing, or the candidate at that point was right in everything he was doing, and how he's going to be the guy. And now look at you know, how these people fall and how the president has to distance himself. How does Avenatti, this is the big question I think everybody has. Do we have any sense of how Avenatti was able to get a hold of these documents?
No, and if you do find out, we'd love to know. You know, my guess is that somebody leaked them to him, somebody who probably wasn't supposed to. I will point out there's been some reporting to suggest some of this information dealt with a different Michael Cohen, some of the transactions that mm-hmm. were described. So the information is not proven bulletproof, but it has been confirmed in the cases that we're talking about here. When you talk about Novartis and AT&T and the Korean aerospace company that paid him for accounting work. So, yeah, it's a really good question. But for Avenatti, who's a guy who's certainly found himself in the spotlight repeatedly and consistently, he seems to be playing this game pretty well and discovered something this week that has, laid to a lot of questions that don't just have to do with Stormy Daniels.
Right. I do wonder about Avenatti fatigue, though. He's on television so much, and he is the one who brought the porn star forward, and then all of a sudden to have something as potentially meaningful as this is. Because, all the polling we see in the sense that I get is that America doesn't really care about the porn star. They've already kind of priced into the transaction with Trump that he was having sex with porn stars and that it doesn't really matter. And if they paid him off, fine. That's just what goes on. But now Avenatti being in possession of something like this, I think that the Trump core looks at this and stops and says, well, now, wait, aren't they all out to get him? Because really, they're catching at least Michael Cohen in the same exact trap and stance as we started this conversation with, in the way that the president was criticizing Hillary Clinton and all the other people that were behaving that he didn't like in Washington, doing the exact same thing, if not even a little worse, because he wasn't even a lobbyist. He's a lawyer, private, personal fixer lawyer with only three clients, he said, which that then does not add up if it turns out that Novartis and AT&T and then whoever this Columbus Nova or whatever that company ends up being. Where do they all fit into this?
Yeah, it's that's where this started too, was the Columbus Nova payment, and Avenatti tried to assert some kind of a tie, with an oligarch who runs an affiliated company, a cousin runs the U.S. version of that company. And there are certainly questions about that, but I think the bigger takeaway right here is that, this is kind of, revealing the kind of seedy underbelly of how these things are handled, and how these companies spend money to try and influence people or get close to people. These aren't maybe huge investments in their ledger books, but the fact that they see fit to make them is I think, of something we don't get to see very often, and suddenly we're able to see it.
Maybe Mr. Mueller can do a 90-minute special on television and explain all of this to us at some point. That would be nice.
Right? I thought that was going to be the Trump. They were going to do the Trump interview on TV. That's the one everybody's proposing right now.
Well,
they could just do this on live TV.
Sure.
Maybe that would make Trump more willing to do it.
Yeah. I think we're going to meet Kim Jong-un in live television. It's going to be like The Apprentice. They're going to do the same set as The Apprentice, and maybe Ivanka and Jared sitting next to him while he's doing it. As opposed to the old lawyer George, they have Mike Pence on the other side. I like the idea of this. I see where it goes. All right. Thank you so much. Really, always, always, always appreciate your time. Aaron Blake from The Washington Post.
Thanks, Ro.
We've got this to tell you. Fly to the front of the line. LitFest, June 9th and June 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours before they're gone. Printers Row, litfest.org/FestPass.
Ro Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here. 720 WGN. No big deal.
No big deal.
It's kind of a big deal.
Thanks, Violetta.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Although K-Pow is out today. Mark Carmen in. And we're not sure what K-Pow is doing.
Check his Instagram.
Good idea. Let me check social media.
As soon as we give him a nickname, he's like,
he's too big for his boots.
I got to take the day off because I'm K-Pow.
He texted me, Ro, at 2:30, like, you're in for me today, right? And I was kind of confused because it seemed like a late text to be getting. I feel like he wanted to come or something. So
wanted to be to rescue his own show.
Pretty much.
Is that what he's doing?
Something along those lines.
Yeah, I do that. Tom Skilling doesn't know anything about that because he just is the show. That is it. Anyway, it's basically Tom Skilling, and there's some people doing news too.
Uh huh.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Well, hardly. Yeah. But happy. What is it? Thursday. Thursday, guys.
Oh no!
And a gorgeous Thursday.
It is.
Has it been that long of a week for you, Tom?
It has.
It's hard to
keep up. It's been a long life up to this point. Yeah. You know, I need some of that jellyfish stuff, as I keep saying. You know,
that supposedly helps supposed the to aging improve process.
Memory, you know. Who would have thought a jellyfish would help?
Yeah,
our
I
memories,
don't.
You know?
I'm not
Somehow
sure.
I don't
still,
buy that. Do
I don't know that. I don't know that. I am 100% behind it. But you know, I don't know. They're fine
the
advertisers.
Heck?
Yeah.
Can you eat it at jellyfish? Could you just eat one, and does that help do the same trick?
Jelly. You know what? Yes, you can.
I bet it would burn though.
Well, no.
Can't they get rid of the stinging part?
No. There is a, I just had this at a Korean restaurant.
Okay.
Really?
Yes. It's it's jellyfish on top of some other, it's like pasta. It's like a cold noodle.
Really?
The way they
so
cut
it kind
it
of solidifies or something? Or
well, it's a, I mean, it's the jellyfish. Jellyfish is kind of just like a big amorphous blob. Now, I don't, see, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I know this is going to shock a lot of people that I have a very wide palate. I'm not afraid of food.
I'm not either. Yeah. It's fun, isn't it? It's one of life's pleasures.
Yeah,
you
never know. I mean, that's the thing.
Right.
There is not a single cuisine I haven't found something that I like.
Isn't that the truth? It's one of the joys of life, experiencing all the different flavors.
And no better town in America.
So true.
I agree.
You can find
everything.
Little restaurants in all the neighborhoods in this city. That you could find some outrageously local thing that you could only find in the host country of that, and you can't find it anywhere else in America.
It's
and this
true.
Jellyfish thing, not that unusual, but there it was, had it, and I was eating it before I realized that it was jellyfish.
Oh.
Well, you know, it sounds about as appealing as drinking a raw egg, you know, or something like that to me. But then you think of sushi, and, you know, you get those little eggs and all the rest. They're very good. You know, I just love sushi. I'm surprised.
Right. It's a stripped. It's basically stripped. It comes in strips, and it looks like a big wavy noodle, and it's cold, and it's marinated.
Uh-huh.
And it's delicious. And it's got a really interesting texture.
Have they cooked it somehow, raw or what?
I don't ask.
They say in Italy and some parts of Europe, they eat the jellyfish. They like to eat the sashimi-style strips with soy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you put soy sauce
Japan,
on anything.
Japan, too.
That's really true. Yeah, so this was can't remember, maybe it was Japanese. I'm trying to remember now. It was Japanese.
Chinese have eaten it for a millennium, according to this article.
Yes. Oh, for sure. There's a Chinese restaurant that I go to. All right, now, so I do this, and this has become a regular of mine. I found this Chinese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell anybody about
what
it.
What do you mean?
Because
you're afraid the crowd's
going to
arrive.
Well, why do you bring it up then?
Because it already has gotten insane, because the Tribune called it the best Chinese restaurant in Chicago.
Wow, that'll do it.
Does it start with an F?
It's Jade Court, which is down on the UIC campus.
Oh. I'll write that down. Okay.
Now, what sets it apart, Ro, from other Chinese restaurants?
I'll tell you what sets it apart from other Chinese restaurants is the folks who do it. It's the old Phoenix people from Chinatown who started another restaurant up, you know, in Violetta Land on the UIC campus on Racine and Harrison.
Go Flames.
Yeah, right. It's right across from the UIC Pavilion. It's authentic. And it's not what you'd get in your standard, like, Cantonese restaurant in Chicago. It's Hong Kong style.
Oh.
It is spectacular. And there's a ton of seafood. And I don't know where they get these things. They have oysters that they cook. I don't do raw oysters. That I will not do.
Do you not? Is that right?
Yeah, no.
I had some the other night. They're such a treat.
Oh,
yeah, no. No.
Except they're they got.
Yeah, I don't want to tell you why I don't want to do it, but I don't want to do it. But the cooked oysters. Cooked oysters are another thing. The thing is like the size of a catcher's mitt.
Wow!
And it's got a golf ball sized oyster thing in it.
Is it
so
like
good.
Rockefeller style?
It's cooked. It's done, and then they put this other stuff in it that comes along with it. I think part of it is jellyfish in that, too.
Wow.
Stripped jellyfish.
Well, that sounds very interesting.
Oh, it's amazing. And then, of course, soy sauce, which is, that's the most important thing.
Is it one of those restaurants where you just have the pictures and you don't really, really know what it is?
No, they don't even have pictures. They have it on the menu. And first of all, half the people in there are
authentic?
Really authentic. And
so it's Mandarin speaking, or Cantonese, I guess it would be.
Yeah, and there's just tables of people that are that don't seem to be speaking a lot of English, and they're doing a dim sum, and they have these things, and they just drop them, and you can tell the people there, you say, just you know, what do you have on special tonight? And they will just bring it to you.
Wow.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, I love Chinese food. I, of course, I'm like you are, Ro. I love trying everything. But Chinese food is delicious. Mm-hmm. And dim sum, that's really good. Well, that's a great lead. I'd love to check that
best,
out.
Well, Phil Vitale called it the best. This is the problem.
Yeah.
Phil Vitale ruined it for all of us.
Darn it,
Phil.
He
caused a problem because you were onto it really early. I remember you talking about it.
Yeah. And Phil Vitale privately said it's the best Chinese restaurant in Chicago. And then you're like, oh, Phil! Oh, come on!
Why do you have to do that, Phil?
It. Plus, it looks like a BYOB, so I can always get behind that.
It is a BYOB. To me, some of the best restaurants in Chicago, without question.
Yeah, definitely the ethnic restaurants.
Are BYOB.
Because they don't try to do too much. They focus on the food.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then you bring whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's really funny. This is the last time I was in there a couple of weeks ago. This like party of people came in, and they brought a cooler. They looked like they were going to like a tailgate.
Like
Ravinia. Right, exactly. And they had a cooler. They should have put a candelabra on the table. There was like a whole thing. When's Tony Bennett coming on? I mean, it was like, and they were like,
well, that's all right.
Oh, it's
good
so much fun. It is actually kind of more fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. They're taking advantage of the BYOB quality.
Well,
the restaurant.
And then plus you save some money on the drink, so you can just like go all out on the food.
That's
right?
A good point.
I never even think about it. I just say to the woman who owns it, I'm like, okay, just do whatever.
Yeah, isn't whatever. That, and that is really fun. There's a sushi place up in Andersonville I go to, and my roommates and I have gone over there, and we just tell the chef, go for it, you know?
Right.
You get the most amazing things, that you'd never know to ask for yourself.
I know. It's the best.
It is.
The best.
It is.
We started on jellyfish. I don't know how we ended.
Well, I'd like to try a jellyfish now. I guess, are you recommending jellyfish? Are you saying that these are
It's really good. Well, they have it there. I know they have it at a Japanese restaurant. I had it where it's kind of a jellyfish salad.
Wow.
And I know people are like, oh, God.
It sounds terrible.
Until you have it.
And the texture would be, ugh.
I wonder. Yeah, that's kind of that raw egg thing I was saying. I know, that's what I think about. But you know, again.
Like Indian food. Let me just discuss Indian food with you for a second. Because you live actually in a neighborhood where you're not too far from the epicenter of the best Indian food outside of South Asia.
What, up in the Edgewater area?
Yeah.
Devon.
Well, Edgewater, but you go straight west. Like at Devon.
You start at Western and you just keep going west.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a. On Devon Avenue. Yeah.
Yes, you go into that neighborhood and you can find there are so many great Nepalese restaurants Indian places, Pakistani places. And then you could buy a sari while you're there in case you need one.
Beautiful fabrics.
They have. And then they've got these ethnic grocery stores up there that are so much fun.
I know.
And when I was a kid, I was like afraid of Indian food, right? Because people are like, oh, I had Indian food last night, I don't feel so good. Because if you're not used to the spice profile, it can really kind of get to you.
Very
and
unusual.
I sort of got into that years ago, the spice. And then as soon as I started with Indian food, like 15 years ago, it's like an absolute obsession with me.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it too.
We order it too. And you know what's nice is so many of the dishes are vegetarian, but there are other ones. There's a chicken in like a sauce that they make, and it's absolutely
chicken
delicious.
Chicken masala, I love that one. The curries are just—they're different than the Thai curry. They're so good.
Yeah, that's all good. All right, we can talk about this all night,
boy,
but we got to go.
Making
and
us
by the way, this is a perfect time to mention this. Tom Skilling is brought to you by PermaSeal Basement Systems.
Okay. I know. I came into this feeling good. Now I'm starving.
I've got
TV shows to do all evening.
A little cooler on the weekend. I know that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot cooler.
Lot
it's
going to
feel like
weekend.
Early March.
We don't want to go back to that,
Tom. Tomorrow, the beautiful thing is get in the car and drive down to Kankakee tomorrow. It'll be up in the upper 70s, low 80s in spots. And the warm weather is back next week.
All right.
You know?
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
You
Thanks,
bet.
Tom.
Right, see
Tom
you guys.
Talk to you tomorrow. Here is Judy Pilak telling us what's coming up. Top of the hour.
Former Congressman Mel Reynolds is going to prison.
Oh, no. My old colleague.
Let me just say
I have
again.
I have some stories about working with him years ago. Ooh, boy. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll share some a little later on. Violetta? Ro Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. You know, the Walk of Fame ceremony. This is a big deal.
It is.
It's a big deal. It's coming up a week from tomorrow, May 18th. It's starts at 10 a.m. outside Trip Tower in Pioneer Court. Five inductees are going to be honored. Mm-hmm. You got Roger Treemstra. I always had trouble saying his name. Yeah, even when I was a kid, I had trouble saying
his name. How's it spelled?
Don't ask.
Okay.
And of course, he was the weather guy. And you've also got the velvet voice of Pierre Andre being inducted. Mm-hmm. And Mary Vandeveld,
yes,
who is a current member of the WGN family, mm-hmm, and a just recently departed member of the WGN family, although he is still alive, as it turns out. I just learned it right now. Dave Kaplan is going to be inducted, along with Chuck Swirsky. I would argue legends of Chicago, yeah, sports broadcasting right there.
You are too kind, but it's funny. I replaced Chuck here when he left to go to the University of Michigan. Then he went to the Raptors and then back to the Bulls. Yeah, mm-hmm, he's a legend.
But you grew up here, so it's got to be so cool to think.
So I still remember my late father. We'd be in the car. I'd be in the back seat. My brother hated the Cubs. I loved the Cubs, uh-huh, and we'd have the Cubs games on, and I'd be like, God, I want to do what Jack Brickhouse does.
Ah, so
and then
cool.
Harry, and to be working here, and then to be part of this is unbelievable.
Crazy. It's crazy. Dreams do come true.
They do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Is your family all coming out? I mean, obviously your immediate family.
My mom's coming. My wife and kids are coming. Tommy Waddle, who was my partner here for 10 years.
I never heard of him. Where did he come from?
Yeah, exactly. Mark Silverman, they're coming. My boss is from where I'm at now. So it's going to be really, really cool.
That's so cool. That's great.
That is.
So how many years here was it? 20?
Just under 22.
22 years.
Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That freaks me out.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah, because my parents told me this, and I didn't believe them, and I should have. You know, things are going to start to move really fast, mm-hmm, after you're like 30, and then much faster after 40, and then much faster after 50, and I'm like, oh my God, how does this happen?
I know.
It's crazy.
Before you know it, you're here 22 years.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I know a tough question. It's too overbroad, but I'll ask it anyway because mm-hmm, I'm a hack. Favorite moment at WGN?
Wow, the first time I went on the air, I was nervous, and I'm doing the sports for the late Bob Collins.
Oh.
And I walk in there, and he hands me the copy to read for Papa Nicholas Coffee.
Yeah.
And I completely butchered it because I was like, oh my God, I'm working with Bob Collins.
You couldn't get it out of your mind.
And then shortly there, maybe 6 months, I've been, not even, because I started right around the start of the baseball season. The Cubs are struggling. And they lost, I don't know, 8-10 in a row. And Mark Gray swore in the post-game interview. Mm. And so my producer at the time, who's coming in for this, Dan Filato,
uh-huh,
he's Grace's roommate. He edits the sound for me for the morning. Collins was, I mean, at a different level, man. That guy was huge. And I walk in, and he was pretty intimidating. He was like Bob Knight.
Yeah.
And one cart is marked, do not air. And the other cart is for air. Well, my fault, because I didn't listen to it, but Filato put the label on the wrong one.
Oh.
And so here's Bob Collins. It's Morning Drive. It's WGN, and it's Mark Grace. This effing place is our home, and it's blankety-blank team. And Collins just looked at me, and he took, remember carts you played?
Yes.
Looked like an 8-track?
Cartridge tapes, yes.
Yes. He pulled it out, and he smashed it on the console on the air.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh God, I'm getting fired.
Oh no, that was the very beginning.
Right at the beginning.
And it worked out.
It worked out.
It did work out.
I love that story.
That's true.
Because it's a story no one really tells. And, you know, Dave's like, hey, I'm going to own up to this. And, you know, you make mistakes. You make mistakes.
Crunch wrap.
It is what it is.
We never let her live that one down.
Yeah. She said the unmentionable, the unspeakable on the air once.
And Crunch wrap didn't come out that way.
Right. Whatever.
Yeah.
Taco Bell?
Taco Bell, extra beefy, cheesy, crispy crunch wrap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it now.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it.
She didn't get it right the first time, I can tell you that. So, what does it mean for you to be enshrined in this? This is like a big deal. It's right here on Pioneer Court. Now, the Walk of Fame, I think, will be relocated mm-hmm, a little bit further into the court or somewhere along Michigan Avenue here. But this is, you're forever going to be memorialized here.
Yeah. And there's a statue of Jack Brickhouse. You're here all right there.
Yeah,
it's all happening.
I mean, my favorite sports announcer of all time was Harry because he was so irreverent. But Jack was like the voice of everything Chicago sports. Sure. And to be part of this, I mean, I was stunned. I mean, it's just overwhelming that this kid grows up in Chicago, me. dreams of being on the air, listens to these legends at WGN, and then I'm going to be in there with them. That someday, you know, when I'm long gone, people could walk down the street and go, wow, who was that guy?
Yeah.
I mean,
cool.
My kids could see it. It's really humbling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goosebumps.
Right. Great grandkids. Is. This was my great grandfather, you know, kind of thing like that. That's a pretty amazing thing. It's a pretty amazing institution. And as I pointed out yesterday, there's no one on this show going to make that Walk of Fame. So it's all good.
Well, Judy. Yeah.
No, Judy's already on it. But
and I'd like to point out, I got on before Dave Campbell.
There's no question.
No competition.
You know what?
You know what? He's still afraid of you. You see, he doesn't even work here anymore, and he's still afraid of you.
Pylax, she's the great. You're the favorite.
You don't have to say this. You're not required.
We go way back.
We do. We have history.
Mm-hmm. Favorite Dave story there, Judy? Do you have one?
No, nothing for
air. Nothing you can tell?
Gosh, no, Dave. Your secrets are all good
with me. I used to hang out with friends of Judy's. I mean, I got to know Judy very well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. You know what?
We'll let that sit there.
Speechless. Yeah. That can sit there.
Yeah.
I'm speechless. But congrats, okay. Dave. You deserve it.
Thanks, Judy. You're the best.
Okay. Hey, can I ask you about the Cubs real fast here?
Bring it up.
Cubs Sox tomorrow. How exciting is this?
Pretty cool.
Right? And it's fascinating for me because I started my career on the White Sox radio station, and I competed my whole life against the Cubs, right? As an afternoon person in Chicago against Cubs baseball here on WGN. And then they leave WGN, and WGN hires me to come over here to compete against the Cubs.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, wow.
Familiar position.
And then the White Sox come back here, and it's like full circle. I had no idea that any of this was going to happen. The Cubs do seem to be putting it back together here now. This is a moment. But Yu Darvish is a question mark that I think all Cubs fans stop and think to themselves, hey, wait a second. Why are we paying, for a mansion in Malibu for this guy? And what are we going to get? What do you think about him?
If you think back to 2015, John Lester was eerily similar, as Theo put it. He struggled mightily. Said he had a dead arm and blah, blah, blah. And all the talk shows were going, wow, what a bust. $155 million for that? And then we know where it ended up. John Lester.
Do we need to get him his own catcher?
There's talk about Chris Jimenez, his guy who's in the minors, coming back up. But right now, I talked to Joe Maddon last night at Anthony Rizzo's event. He said no. He said, Darvish is going to be fine. But he said, coming over here, they have something called the pitching infrastructure, the game plans. All that. It takes a lot to learn and to understand it. And so they believe they're going to be okay. We'll see.
Okay.
I hope so.
They seem to be turning a corner here. And the White Sox, now, I was out there Tuesday night. They're finding really interesting ways to lose games. But you could see the core. There's some really great, raw, young talent on this team. And the question really is, can Rick Renteria kind of cobble them together? They seem to really want to play for him.
He's a great guy.
Right. And that's what I think that's the thing. I think he's the key to this, to be able to pull this off. I think you're going to see this team start to gel a little bit. They're talking about this Eloy Jimenez. It's insane. How well he's playing in Double A. They're talking already about moving him up to Triple A, right?
Yeah, he will go probably to Triple A, and he was the crown jewel of the Cubs farm system, and then they trade him to get Jose Quintana because they're in a win now mode,
right?
And the White Sox said, we've got a pitcher under control, real cheap contract. That's what you had to give up.
It was a win-win for both teams.
It was, but I still think the Sox will end up being the bigger winner of it, unless the Cubs win a World Series with Quintana. But I will tell you, the White Sox future is exceedingly bright.
Well, compare that for us, Dave, because the White Sox are in rebuild mode, and we saw this with the Cubs. And how would you compare what they were doing then and what the White Sox are doing now?
It was different because the Cubs had very little to trade. In terms of assets, the White Sox had a lot to trade. Chris Sale and, you know, Quintana and David Robertson and Swarzak and Tommy Canley. They made some really astute deals. The Cubs had to draft really well, got lucky on, they'll tell you, they got lucky. First of all, Chris Bryant went second. The guy that went ahead of him is out of baseball. Imagine if the Astros, who won last year, had taken Bryant, the Cubs take Mark Appel, the pitcher, he's out of the game.
Oh.
It's a totally different rebuild. Plus, Jake Arrieta was considering walking away from baseball.
I know.
Because he had an ERA in the sixes. He comes here. They fix him. And he becomes Jake Arrieta.
Right.
So you got to make your own breaks, but you also got to get lucky.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's an exciting time.
It is.
An exciting time.
It's fun to watch.
To be a baseball fan in Chicago because the Cubs look like they are, you know, they're where they... They're sitting chilly right now as they make the turn toward June, and we'll just have to see what the rest of the summer is going to look like and after the All-Star break. And everybody keeps saying, wait for you, Darvish, after the All-Star break. I'm like, what do you mean?
Why do you have to wait that long?
Why do we have to wait at all? The season started.
You pay him that kind of money, you expect instantaneous gratification.
Yes. I will wait. I will be very patient with the White Sox in terms of making their transition, and I think they're going to be fun when the weather gets warmer. I think there's a lot of, because you got so many young kids on the team, then, and many of the kids not from North America. So when they're seeing, when it's this cold, I think it freaks them out a little bit. I don't think you take that out of baseball now.
No. I mean, and look at, like, Jorge Soler struggled anytime it was cold here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Castro didn't like the cold. It is what it is.
It's a very different game for these guys.
It is. Very.
Very different game. All right. And who do you like in the NBA, just very quickly?
I'd be surprised if Golden State doesn't win it now the way they look. But mm-hmm. I
think it's going to be Golden State and Cleveland again?
I do.
Is Boston have a shot?
I want Boston. Yeah. I'm kind of leaning. Maybe they can pull the upset, but boy, LeBron's good.
Oh, he is. How about that kid, the coach at Boston, that kid who did not get a single vote for Coach of the Year?
Yeah, I know
him. In the Eastern Conference Finals.
So I called a lot of Butler basketball when he was the coach there.
Yeah.
He is as classy a person. He is as brilliant as you would think. He's amazing. Brad Stevens, quality.
Yeah, well, he got ripped off, man. I'm mad about that. I'm mad about so many things right now, Cap, and I'm mad about that.
Do you know that Brad Stevens was a marketing assistant for Eli Lilly? His wife's a lawyer, and he hated it. And he came home, he goes, honey, I know I've got a job, I make good money, and I got a car from the I quit, and I'm going to be a volunteer assistant at Butler.
Oh.
Volunteer.
Oh, right.
And his parents are like, are you out of your mind? 7 years later, he was the head coach, and like, 12 years later, he's the head coach of the Celtics, making $25 million.
What a story.
It's a great story.
See, dreams do come true.
Yes.
Like for Dave Kaplan.
Follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Come see
good
Dave
advice.
Kaplan. It's a public event, by the way, week from tomorrow, right here on Pioneer Court, the corner of Michigan Avenue and Heaven, right by the river. You can't miss it if you just show up on the north side of the river. It is the induction into the WGN Walk of Fame, and Chuck Swirsky, Roger Treemstra, Pierre-Andre, Mary Vandeveld, and David Kaplan.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very humbled and blessed.
Deserved.
So, loved it here. This was my home for almost 22 years. It's awesome.
Now get back over to NBC SportsNet.
You got it.
NBC Chicago SportsNet.
We'll be
Chicago,
watching.
And I'll see you when you walk through the ABC building.
Yes, that's true.
That's
we run into each other.
He looks great in makeup,
sometimes
doesn't he?
He does.
Oh, for God's sake. You know, the worst part is when it bleeds onto your collar and I'm going out to dinner.
I know it.
Yeah.
You know how many shirts I go through?
Please, keep going. And I wear makeup all the time, even when I'm not on TV.
Right. I mean, they spray ours on at NBC.
Right.
Airbrush it, and my shirts get destroyed.
Oh, right. Yeah. You can never get it out.
My dry cleaner, what'd you do?
Oh, my makeup.
Sorry.
They don't understand necessarily. Yeah, they don't.
Like, all right.
Guy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
Cap. All right, we've got right now, don't tell me, we've got Judy telling us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
The judge in the Laquan McDonald case again clears the courtroom. We'll tell you why.
Oh, my gosh. Here is Violetta standing by with the WGN Talk, brought to you by, powered by, ComEd, powering lives. Rococho with Anna DeBlatches right here on 720 WGN. Coming up on the program, top 5 you won't believe. Gordon Chang is going to join us. He is the foremost expert on North Korea. And now that we have a summit date of June 12th.
In Singapore.
Be there. There is a there's things to discuss. What is it that we're looking for? What are we going to get out of this? But is it what could go right? What would be a success, and what could possibly go wrong? And Gordon will explain all of that to us so that you can tell your friends and neighbors.
Great.
Because we're trying to figure it all out. Because, from 1 minute to the next. You know, Rudy Giuliani today has separated from his law firm. And his law firm put out a press release, a statement saying, we don't go for hush money.
It's not our thing.
Yeah, not our thing.
Everyone's been acting like it's so normal that we just sort of, we have hush money, little pots of money that we just sort of pay off people.
Yeah, and that's what Giuliani was basically saying.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Well, and the question is, who left who here?
So that
sounds pretty obvious. I think it does sound pretty clear because apparently Rudy Giuliani just planned to take a leave of absence, and then it sort of became an official statement that the parting would be permanent.
Yes, and adios. Now, he still has Giuliani Associates. He didn't get fired from that because that would be hard to do, but possible, I suppose. This was the law firm that he was actually with, where he was actually of counsel. He was an actual lawyer there. And now they're wondering, does he even have a law license anymore? There are stories about him having a little bit of a drinky poo before some of these interviews.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
There was a question about, there's a bar that he hangs out in.
Weren't some of these morning show appearances?
In Midtown. No, the Hannity show, the evening appearances.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe a little eye opener. I don't know. What is he doing?
Because one of them was one of the Sunday morning political talk shows where he made news.
Yes. Now, we don't know that was actually shot that Sunday morning, though.
Okay. Good point.
My sense is because he got confused about the day. Many times, those Sunday morning interviews that you see have been recorded either on Saturday or Friday. So, don't know for sure what happened there. But I can tell you this, that it would explain a lot here. But the Ro-Contra with Anna DeVlantis, Mighty Arts Players, have decided that they would like to put together a little tribute.
Oh, perfect.
For Rudy Giuliani.
I don't think I'm going to... They know the decision I make is going to be in the best interest, not just of my client, but the United States. He fired Comey because Comey would not, among other things, say that he wasn't a target of the investigation. He's entitled to that. Hillary Clinton got that, and he couldn't get that. So he fired him, and he said, I'm free of this guy. I know James Comey. I know the president. Sorry, Jim, you're a liar, a disgraceful liar. Every FBI agent in America has his head down because of you. It would have been good for God if God had kept you out of being head of the FBI. We should have fired him.
The need more space.
Is your mom in there?
Since now there's new dental.
That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through the law firm, and the president repaid it.
Oh, I didn't know he did.
Yeah.
There's no campaign finance law.
Zero. Like, I take care of things like this for my clients. I don't burden them with every single thing that comes along. These are busy people. I guess Jared is a fine man. You know that. But men are, disposable. But a fine woman like Ivanka, come on.
Something that did stand out to me, I remember when Michael Cohen was interviewed about it, and it seemed like he was saying that he was never reimbursed that $130,000, and now it sounds like the story's changing.
Well, he was definitely reimbursed. There's no doubt about it.
So why did he say he wasn't?
Maybe, first of all, but it wasn't for the campaign.
Right.
It was to save their marriage, not their marriage as much as their reputation.
He needs to get his facts straight.
I like how he pauses to choose which direction to go.
He wanted to pivot.
Not that one.
There was a pivot, and then he was like, oh, I shouldn't go there either.
But then kind of broke news and got out ahead of the story like several times.
Yeah. Well, okay. So he calls a member of the family expendable.
Disposable.
Disposable.
Well, no, men in general kind of sort of read from that, right? Men, member of the family and
disposable.
All men.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fine woman like Ivanka, though.
She's not disposable.
I have noticed a very marked retreat by the Ivankas from public view. Have you noticed that? Yeah. I mean, where are they? Are they even in the country? Because if I'm them, I'm already trying to find a place in the Amalfi Coast.
They've been at some of the public ceremonies because Melania called out to them for what was it, a Mother's Day thing they did or something celebrating moms at the White House, and then also when she launched her own campaign. So they were there, but you're right, didn't take speaking.
They were there for Be Best.
They were there for that.
Okay.
Best you can.
It'd be best if I move out with boy back to Slovenia. I don't know what has happened here, but I could just say that Rudy Giuliani has not really, I think, done the best by his client.
No.
You know, the first rule of medicine and of the law is do your patient or client no harm. And he basically, especially the Comey part, where he admits that he fired Comey because he couldn't get Comey to let him off the deal. And that's the, you know, he wanted it to be said that he wasn't a target of the investigation and that Hillary had gotten that sort of treatment. So why wasn't the president getting that sort of treatment? So I'm just going to fire him. That is the definition of a crime. So that's a problem. So if you're a lawyer for the guy, you don't go, listen, he didn't rob the convenience store with a gun. He said he had a gun. He didn't actually show a gun. He didn't have a gun.
Boy, his comments certainly didn't help the president. And to the point where the president had to say he's got to get his facts straight. I mean, do you say that about your lawyer who's out there speaking on behalf of you, trying to make things better and clean it up?
Right. And he does have other lawyers now. I mean, he's got the big ones are leaving. I like the one lawyer. He's got the really famous lawyer, Ty Cobb, who's leaving because he's retiring. That's what you do in the middle of the biggest case, potentially, of your career. You go, you know what? I'm turning 65. I got to go. You know, my pension's kicking in. I got to run. I got to see it. That's not what happened. That is not what happened.
No.
So
Giuliani spotted at the Yankees Red Sox game last night. So many said that it was already sort of he's not, even though he's saying I'm just leaving to keep my work with the Mueller investigation and the president in focus and make that my entire, you know, my entire focus.
That's why he's leaving his law firm.
That's why he's leaving the law firm. That doesn't necessarily seem like he's totally front and center for the president's legal team right now.
I'm going to call the law firm. Giuliani is my lead counsel on, you know, for my account with the law firm.
You're like, wait a minute.
I'm definitely calling the senior partner in the law firm. I'm going, you know what? Who else you got over there?
Well, that's what many people are analyzing. The side-by-side, you know, press releases, I guess you could call it, from the head of the law firm saying he's no longer with the firm. We thank him for what he's done and that kind of thing. And then Giuliani
Rudy Giuliani worked here.
Temporary leave.
From December 31st, 2004 until May 8th, 2018. We have no further comment. All right.
Period. Full stop.
Yeah.
Done.
All right. Well, we wish everybody the best of luck. Okay.
So, you know, hey, really quickly, we've got NBC renewed the four new shows, Dick Wolf series, Dick Wolf, a Chicagoan himself, but of course, the Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, and Chicago Med, another season. And we like that because they shoot here.
Oh,
it's good
it's
for
the
our
best.
Economy.
It's the best.
And it really depicts Chicago.
They do shoot it here. I know. They do shoot
That's
it here.
That's exactly what it's like to live here.
They shoot it here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
Shows are doing well. And
everybody's very hunky. It's they're all kind of in love with each other. A few of them have New York accents. I can't quite figure it out, but it's okay.
One of them has an Australian accent.
Right. That's
Chicago Fire.
Right. That's its own issue. I auditioned. You know, they're always looking for new shows. I auditioned for Chicago Public Library.
Oh, good.
And it's
thought Streets and Sand.
Where we chase you
Streets
down.
Streets and Sand already got fired. Already got canceled. This is Chicago Public Library, where you play a guard in Chicago Public Library, and you try to get perverts out and away from the computers there. Oh. It's like
Yuck.
A whole thing.
Waiting in line for those computers, I mean.
Yeah, no,
the
no,
stories.
Oh, you don't want to see. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Don't look at the history.
Don't look at the search history. Delete, delete,
oh, yeah.
Double delete.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
It's like a whole thing.
And then Brooklyn Nine-Nine was canceled for the fifth season, after the fifth season, and people are losing their minds about that. I was not a fan of that show, but people
love that show,
and that would not be renewed.
Well, that's interesting, because my sense is that that show could probably live on a cable universe.
Yeah, it's one of those you wonder if it's going to have a life outside of broadcast television.
Right.
Because it is so popular.
I feel like we could do Chicago food sanitation, all the festivals around here, cover all of those.
Chicago Department of Health?
Yeah. Hit up all the restaurants, you get a whole nother angle.
I would like to do Chicago Building Inspector, where I just show up. The whole show is me showing up and getting cash and walking away. All right. Here we go. Let's find out from Judy what's coming up at the top of the hour.
Illinois looking at harsher laws to keep cannabinoids illegal. We'll explain.
Harsh. Feel that has got the WGN Driving Trouble Spots brought to you by AppleChevy.com. Roconcho with Anna DeBlantis, yes. Right here on 720 WGN. All right.
Another great sign of spring and summer in Chicago, the fresh markets are starting.
Yes, at Daily Plaza.
Daily Plaza is open, the longest running one, and then you've got all the neighborhood ones. You can check cityofchicago.org and check out yours.
And walked over, so I went to Lincoln Park over the weekend and walked through there.
Mm-hmm. Some of them don't open until June, as I'm looking at the schedules here, but the Daily Plaza one is open.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. You really do get amazing stuff at those.
You do.
If you like to cook, if you like to, you know.
They have really good baked goods.
Yeah, I do. That's so true. Pies.
Breads and pies.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Fresh
flowers.
For those
rows who don't cook.
And the Happy Mother's Day. And the...
I'd like a cherry pie, please.
I'm not cooking, kids. I don't give a crap what you've done.
And I'm not sharing my pie.
Mommy's tired.
Everyone, give me $5 for this pie.
Where's my vodka?
Oh. She gets to spend
now
Mother's
some
Day.
Kettle One would be nice.
I've been working
really
all day.
Big bottle.
Why'd you get me vodka? I wanted to specially Kettle One. What is this?
These headlines
pop
aren't
off.
Gonna write themselves. Shut up.
That's
kind of me. All right, you know what I gotta do?
Maybe we got something going on.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. I'm a little caustic right now because of what's in the top five. There's something here
something
that just makes me so angry. I can't even get over it.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we will. Checking in at
number five.
This is not it. Chicago Police Board President Lori Lightfoot, former Chicago Police Board President, has kicked off her campaign for mayor, promising to chart a progressive course for the city. She becomes the ninth challenger. Challengers to take on Rahm Emanuel. Have I announced?
I don't know. Think you're going to.
My next story is who isn't running for mayor?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the population is dropping here. It's like half the city has decided they want to run against Rahm Emanuel. She's billing herself as a progressive, and she promised radical change in governing style.
I am here to talk to Chicagoans about a new progressive course for our city, one in which equity and inclusion are our North Stars. All over Chicago, people feel the effects of the us versus them style of governance. That mentality and style of governance ends the day that I am sworn in as mayor.
You know, almost immediately, she jumps to the very top of the pack here, I think.
I do, too.
Because she's got an excellent resume. She's got great Chicago credentials. Now, she's be a bit of a lightning rod because of her work on the police board and other sorts of things. But she certainly will be able to draw. And, you know, it was pointed out to me today when she was making her announcement by a city father.
Yeah.
Who said that, there aren't any big name Hispanic candidates, and that it is believed by people around Ms. Lightfoot that she might actually, even though she's not Hispanic, she might draw from the Hispanic community.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And that makes her sort of a triple threat.
She'd be the first African-American female mayor, but her credentials, as you point out, Ro, are very solid. And she's she was asked today by if, you know, the mayor has appointed you to this police position. Are you now going after the person who gave you your chance? And she responded, no one gave me anything except my hardworking parents. I mean, she's a former federal prosecutor, works for Mayor Brown, has taken leadership roles in the city, as you point out, with the police board and police reform, and has been frequently critical of the mayor, even in times when that was difficult to do. So,
listen, if you can't bite the hand that feeds you in this town, whose hand are you supposed to bite? I mean,
well,
this is,
or if you just want to be on the side of what you think is right and integrity, and I think that's the message she was sending.
It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. I just think that there's a lot of opportunity here for people to raise a few bucks and then run away. And then there's some people who are going to be there at the end. And I think that she's somebody who's probably going to be there at the end. But I'm going to tell you, I've told you this already. I know what's going to happen.
Runoff?
Oh, well, I think without question there's going to be a
runoff. Too many candidates, you would think.
You
no,
won't
no
end
one's
up
going to get the.
By the time we get to November, there are 10 candidates now. Mm-hmm. And there may be more to come in before it's all said and done.
There will be.
By the time we get to November, there will be 4 or 5 candidates left that will be, you know, capable of putting money on television and, you know, being, you know, at the top of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But because Rahm Emanuel, the more the merrier for him, right, as the incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get 30 people to get on the ballot, that'd be great for him. But you're going to see somebody jump in mid to late November and spend a lot of money and come in at the you know, sort of wait this thing out and then dive in when they can. It's really going to be interesting.
It is interesting. But hey, it's good to have a conversation with multiple points of view at this period of time. Lori Lightfoot said today that she feels the city's moving in the wrong direction on almost every front. You know, and you've got people who are representing different views about how we should move forward.
When's the last day to get on the ballot?
That's a good question.
Whenever the last day, like the week before the last day to get on the ballot, because people will be out there doing their, people are out there. I mean, I did petitions. I don't know. I did, just in case someone asks. I mean, I've circulated petitions. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. You better. You might want to jump in, Ro.
Yeah. All right.
Well, there are a lot of candidates to choose from right now.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they want me. All right, checking in at
number 4.
All right, here's the one. This is the one.
This is the one that,
This morning on Fox Business, Thomas McInerney is a Fox military analyst. Thomas McInerney was a highly decorated Lieutenant General of the United States Air Force. He is a Vietnam-era veteran, Distinguished Flying Cross recipient. He had a very remarkable Air Force career. Since he's now in his 80s, so in these, you know, past number of years, he has, you know, been known to say some outrageous things.
Yes.
He might have flown a little too close to the sun, it appears, for my liking. He was the one that said that the Malaysian airliner that disappeared was actually flown to Pakistan by terrorists, which, of course, turned out wasn't true then, isn't true now. They found the wreckage, parts of the wreckage of that plane. But this is something.
Yeah.
So today he told Charles Payne on Fox Business Channel that if John McCain's opposition to Gina Haspel's nomination as CIA director is warranted, McCain said that her refusal to acknowledge torture's immorality is disqualifying. That's what McCain said. Then McInerney, in an attempt to justify the merits of torture, said this.
Well, she can't use it anymore because we've determined the Congress that it's not legal. The fact is John McCain, it worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John. The fact is those methods can work and they're effective, as former Vice President Cheney said. And if we have to use them to save 1 million American lives, we will do whatever we have to.
Okay. Yeah. All right. There are respectful ways to have a debate about this. I think it doesn't comport to the American ethic. And you've got people that I trust on both sides of this argument who could say that it doesn't work to the level. They'll tell you almost anything depending on the torture. But to go after John McCain, who was a prisoner of war of the North Vietnamese, after being shot down. And as you recall, the president said, I prefer guys who weren't shot down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Mm. Okay. John McCain's service to the United States of America is without dispute. John McCain is a multi-generational naval officer. His father, John McCain's father, was a high-ranking admiral in the Pentagon at the time of John McCain's service in Vietnam, at the time he was shot down. As a matter of fact, the North Vietnamese offered to return John McCain to the United States out of military deference to his father, the admiral.
But he stayed.
He did not. He refused to go. He said he would not go until the rest of his people went.
Yeah.
John McCain was grievously injured in the crash. He was tortured, taking advantage of the fact of his shoulder injuries. He, as you will probably notice throughout the years of watching John McCain, cannot lift his arms above his shoulders as a result of the injuries he sustained in the crash and as a result of the torture that he endured, in some cases for periods of time on a nightly basis while he was being held in Hanoi. To argue that John McCain was any less than an honorable prisoner of war and defender of the United States during the Vietnam War, after the Vietnam War, and his undying service to the United States of America, even to this point, as he sits at the very, very end of his life, and he's written a book about the American ethic and American morality, and he's going to leave us with this tome that describes what his vision of America is. I happen to subscribe to that same vision. It is reprehensible. It is despicable. It is beyond the pale. And General McInerney served his country honorably. I don't take any of that away from him. But now, as a retired Air Force officer, it is beneath the dignity of the United States Air Force, United States military, and the general himself to say something as callous and inaccurate as that. And this is a moment in American history where we cannot abide by that. I think a lot of us have had enough of the name-calling, and especially of bone-spur Donald Trump saying to us, oh, you know, I prefer guys who weren't shot down. Well, where were you, sir, during all of this? Yeah. And I do respect that this general was actually in the fight. He flew a number of missions, including in little forward air controller planes, which were very, very, very easily shot down. This guy was an American hero. But what he has done now is he's basically handed those medals back over because it is reprehensible to say that about a man who has served this country, regardless of party or regardless of how you feel, because he's a Republican too. John McCain ran against Barack Obama, which is, of course, what makes a lot of people mad. And it's the political wedge that goes on here because he lost to Barack Obama. It is absolutely despicable. All right. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Learn how real Chicagoans live, the day-to-day struggles, successes with health, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy Chicago, Sundays, 11:30 a.m. on WGN-TV.
All right, top 5 of 5 continues right here. We have worked our way all the way up to
number 3.
Linda Vester is one of the women who has come out and accused Tom Brokaw of misdeeds. So she was on Good Morning America today with George Stephanopoulos, and she described what she says is a bad workplace environment at NBC.
Have they called you since this happened?
Yes, they called my attorney and said they would like to talk to me. And our answer is, as soon as NBC News or NBC Universal hires outside counsel to do a proper, thorough investigation, I will be glad to sit down.
You don't trust them to investigate this themselves?
Well, I mean, I think it's common sense. You can't investigate yourself. You just can't. There's an internal bias. That's how it works.
All right. She goes on to say she's surprised by how Brokaw's responded to all of this.
Tom Brokaw's pretty angry. He says he was ambushed, says he was perp walked. What's your response?
Well, I expected a denial. That is what harassers generally do. What I didn't expect was such a personal attack. And what I'm concerned about is the message that that sends to women inside NBC News about whether or not they are safe to report somebody who is powerful, if they get that kind of backlash.
It's interesting. Another one of these cases that hasn't made it to court. There are no formal charges, nothing like that. It's sort of a situation where Tom Brokaw pushes back in the strongest way possible, saying his entire career has been brought down by these untrue allegations. And then you have, you know, women like this who repeat things that all sound similar, and they didn't know each other. There are about four of them in his case. And it's just, it's troubling. That there's also a story that some of the women, you saw a bunch of women of NBC signed a letter together saying, we back Tom Brokaw on this, which you haven't really seen.
Including Andrea Mitchell.
Rachel Maddow, Mika Brzezinski, Maria Shriver. I mean, you know, people who you would think would be proponents of that movement who say, no, not him. And that's what makes this one stand out different than the Lauer case and right. Charlie Rose and so many others. But geez, NBC, I would agree. It seems as if an internal investigation when you have this many may not be the best way to, for optically, if no other reason, to handle this type of an investigation.
Well, you should welcome the investigation then. It's hard to disprove a negative from years ago, from decades ago, and it may end up just being a his word against her word moment. But her allegation wasn't even that he had exposed himself or that it was genitally sexual in its nature. He said shushed her and then put his finger on her lips, right? And then at one other point did come in to try to kiss her, and it was rebuffed. So I think that it you know, there's a spectrum of these things, and you know, the Harvey Weinstein being 10 on that scale,
yeah.
Then you know, Brokaw is somewhere in the 3 to 4 range in terms of that, if those allegations are true. But how do you disprove something that is going to be it becomes a real problem for a lot of these people.
It does.
So all right, we continue on here.
Yes.
Checking in at
number 2.
All right, you know, day-to-day legislative governance can be very, very boring.
Sure,
right?
It can.
But
I've had to cover city council meetings before.
But every once in a while at a city council meeting, something kind of fun happens. This happened in Portland, Oregon. There was a civic-minded citizen who decided that he was going to protest the expansion of I-5 that goes through Portland. That's the big main expressway that works its way up the west coast of the United States of America. And he didn't like the expansion of it, and he thought he would, take his grievance and put it in the form of song.
Oh, we all like to drive around town, but you can't help noticing how much it's slowed down. And adding more lanes is never done, because if we build them, they will come. And the thing we need to understand is induced demand.
He gets his full 3 minutes. Way to get attention.
Smash or trash. I'm going with a trash right there. Very, I do like, and only in Portland, though, can you do a bad Bob Dylan, sort of Peter, Paul, and Mary, sing-songy kind of thing.
What would it be here, like Chance the Rapper or something? Do something like that?
Yeah, it would be better. I would have taken anything except for that. Okay. You know what? That would maybe even hate more to go to the city council meeting. Oh, God, if the guy's got a guitar, call police.
Number 1.
Okay, the state of Georgia, you know, they got a primary coming up. And as we have seen throughout the country, there are people who are trying to out Trump, out conservative, out gun literally and figuratively each other. Mm-hmm. And there was this ad that ran that has created some controversy.
I'm Brian Kemp. This is Jake, young man interested in one of my daughters.
Yes, sir.
Jake asked why I was running for governor. I said, 1,
cap government spending.
2,
take a chainsaw to regulations.
3,
Make Georgia number one for small business.
And two things if you're going to date one of my daughters.
Respect.
And?
A healthy appreciation for the Second Amendment, sir.
We're going to get along just fine.
He points a gun at the kid.
Oh,
geez. Like, it's a shotgun, and he closes the shotgun. That it, you know, like a double barrel kind of item, and he just sort of points it at the kid.
Gee.
We're going to get along just fine. Damn right. Well, now, he is trying to outdo himself because he got a lot of attention when he released it like 2 weeks ago, like over the weekend before last. And now he says he's pledging that he would take care of illegal immigrants. One in five Republicans running for governor is ratcheting up their TV messaging before the May 22nd GOP primary, and he wanted to build on the attention of free media that he's been getting from the earlier ad that was sparked.
I'm Brian Kemp. I'm so conservative.
Oh,
I blow
gosh.
Up government spending. I own guns that no one's taking away. My chainsaw's ready to rip up some regulation. I got a big truck. Just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself. Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
Up next, gun and heavy weaponry safety lessons. I mean, he's pointing a gun at somebody's head?
At least he's honest.
They see, that's exactly what his voters are going to say. I like him. That's exactly what I would say if I was doing that. Running for what's he running for?
You're supposed to.
Oh man! All right,
with a gun.
Yep. Well, there you go.
You're supposed to treat all guns like they're loaded, even if they're not. Never point a gun at things that you're not going to shoot. I mean, I don't...
stop being so politically correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pansy.
All right. I just
pinko,
I
mean, lefty commie.
You can be in favor of the Second Amendment and still be about gun safety.
He's personally going to round up people. That's what he's going to do with a shotgun in his truck.
That's me.
There you
All
go.
All right. Thank you. Good
All
luck.
Right. Thank you very much. Good luck, Georgia.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, and we want to get right into it. Gordon Chang is joining us. He is the foremost expert on North Korea, one of the most foremost experts in America on North Korea. And Gordon, as you now know, June 12th is the date of the summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. It's going to be in Singapore. They've agreed to all of that last night. Three American citizens were returned to the United States after being held prisoner in North Korea, two of whom were taken right after the president was inaugurated, which I think is kind of an interesting thing. But let's just, first of all, your reaction to the prisoner release. What does that tell us about the intents here?
Well, it tells us that Kim Jong-un, the North Korean ruler, wants to create a good atmosphere for the talks with President Trump. These three individuals were returned in very good shape. They walked onto the plane. That's in contrast to what happened to Otto Wambeer, who was released last June. He was in a coma and died shortly after returning to the U.S. That's when the North Koreans didn't like us so much. They brutalized Wambeer. So I think that we can say that it looks like the North Koreans now have a very different view of the United States and the president.
You've come a long way, Gordon, from the little rocket man comments that everyone thought would just end negotiations altogether, that they were too far apart. The South Korean president is crediting the President Trump with the economic sanctions that have been put in place and the diplomatic isolation he's created for Kim Jong-un's willingness to come to the table and do this. Is that what you think is the reason for this, or are there other reasons?
Well, there's two primary reasons. One of them is the threats that the president made.
Gordon, hold on 1 second. I'm going to ask you to repeat that again because you just broke up there for a second.
It's the threats that the president made, fire and fury and the rest of it. People in Asia who look at these things said that toward the end of last year, China, North Korea, and South Korea changed their policies dramatically. And they did so because they were concerned about the possibility of war. But also, I think that what's important was the sanctions, U.S. sanctions and U.N. sanctions. These crimped the flow of money to Kim. And not only did he not have money, I think, at this point for firing off missiles and detonating nukes, he also doesn't have as much money as he needs for gift politics. which is handing out luxury items to senior regime members to keep and buy their loyalty.
Hmm. What do we need from North Korea here? What would be considered a win walking away from this?
I think that, first of all, North Korea disarming all of their nukes, all of their ballistic missiles, long range and short range. We'd have to have the strictest inspections regime on Earth, much more strict than that was in the Iran nuclear deal. Also, the Japanese abductees. These were citizens who were kidnapped by North Korea. North Korea has given an accounting for some of them, but that accounting doesn't look to be very accurate. So I think we need much more information on that. And also, I would like to see the North Koreans. No one really mentions this, but I think that the North Koreans should talk to us about David Sneddon, an American citizen who disappeared under mysterious circumstances in 2004. Some people, actually many people, believe him to be in North Korea. I'd like the North Koreans to say that they don't hold him or to tell us that they actually have him.
Does the president deserve the credit that he seems to be receiving? Obviously, he's giving himself a lot of credit, but is he deserving of this?
Yeah, I think the president deserves credit for getting us to this point. And part of it is just because he has been unconventional. But for President Trump to actually succeed long term and get a deal which is enduring, he's going to have to be less himself, and he's going to have to be a little bit more of a guy named Ronald Reagan, who had a vision for the United States and for the world. Trump needs that, especially as we look at what our end game is. He also needs to be a little bit more like his immediate predecessor, Barack Obama, who was a coalition builder. President Trump will have to build coalitions in order to make sure that the North Koreans don't rearm.
Gordon, do you get the sense, I mean, that this is real and that, I mean, this really could happen, that Kim Jong-un would give up his nuclear weapons program in favor of building his economy, and that this is imminently close?
Question, and I think that it's possible. Kim, of course, doesn't want to give up anything, and certainly he doesn't want to give up his nuclear weapons. But it's not really a Kim question. This is a Trump question, because President Trump has the power, even short of the use of force, to get the North Koreans to give up their weapons, to do things they really don't want to do things they never do. So this is an issue of how far our president will go to protect the American people and the international community.
What does North Korea want? What does Kim want?
Well, what Kim wants is what his father and grandfather wanted, and that is to actually take over all of South Korea so that it's ruled from Pyongyang, one Korean state. This is the core goal of the Kim family. It's called Final Victory. Kim Jong-un has been talking about Final Victory recently, and that's an indication that he thinks that he's actually close to achieving what his dad and
Well, won't the South Koreans will have something to say about that, right?
Yeah, well, South Korean citizens, by and large, don't like that. But South Korea has a president, Moon Jae-in, who's extremely sympathetic to North Korea, who's actually trying to amend the South Korean constitution so it's more compatible with North Korea, so that there could be a formal union of the two Korean states. And Moon Jae-in has a number of senior advisors who, in their youth, in their college days, were openly advocating North Korea's taking over South Korea. And these advisors have yet to disavow their earlier views. So essentially, you have a political establishment in Seoul which is very similar in outlook to North Korea's.
Speak about
Hold on. North Korea is a fascist state. It's a national socialist state, you know, very similar. And his treatment of his own people, very, very similar to the way Hitler treated his people. How is it possible that they would cede control to, that the entire Korean peninsula could be ceded to Kim Jong-un?
Well, if you believe in the Juche Revolution, that's North Korean ideology, if you believe in equality, more important than economic freedom and personal freedom, you know, if you believe those things, then clearly, yeah, that's entirely possible. you know, they're not. President Moon Jae-in is part of what's called the 386 generation. It is virulently anti-American. They blame the United States for preventing democracy in South Korea. They're wrong, but that's what they believe. And so, therefore, they see kinship with the North Koreans, and they see that the most important goal is unification of the Korean nation.
Run by the North Koreans. Run, the entire peninsula run by the North Koreans.
Well, some of Moon's advisors obviously believe that. I don't know what Moon himself believes, but they do believe that they certainly are willing to overlook a lot of what's going on in North Korea. And matter of fact, the South Korean government these days works actively to prevent a discussion of human rights in North Korea. So there is a real issue here. And, you know, you talk in terms of what Trump should get credit for. The most important thing that I think Trump gets credit for is preventing Moon Jae-in from doing what he wants to do. Moon will say things that make sound good to us, but behind the scenes, he's been acting in a way which is inconsistent with a treaty partner. And President Trump has worked very hard to keep him from actually causing more mischief than he in fact has.
Wow. Wow. I know there's been political upheaval there, but that's a crazy, crazy, crazy. I cannot imagine how Japan or China or anybody in the West would feel comfortable, or the East,
right.
Would feel comfortable with. I mean, that is a totalitarian, crazy hermit state that imprisons its own people. It tortures its own people. It creates labor camps for people who disagree with the government. I mean, I cannot imagine expanding that into this gigantic economic superpower that South Korea has become. If you give them that, if you give Kim the ability to run Hyundai, right, and all of the and the exports and all the in the goods and services and cash that comes into that, I mean, he becomes the most. It's the 21st century version of Adolf Hitler.
Well, you know, the United States has endured periods of leftist South Korean presidents before. And there were two of them, Kim Dae-jung and Noh Moo-hyun, who were not quite as, quote-unquote, progressive or leftist as Moon and his administration. And we will wait out Moon and we'll prevent him from doing what he wants to do. Also, you know, most South Koreans don't buy this either. You have older South Koreans who remember the American sacrifice during the Korean War and are very pro-American. And you have most younger South Koreans who don't believe that there is a Korean nation. They believe their country is South Korea. So they're South Korean nationalists. So most people in South Korea don't buy into what Moon likes. But nonetheless, President Moon is the guy who drives the political establishment there. And so this is a period of danger for the United States.
All right. Wow. Okay, Gordon. I was thinking we were going to have a very calming conversation here.
Things are looking good in the world.
Right. And you have ruined my day, Gordon. But thank you very much. Appreciate it. We will talk soon. Thank you so much. Gordon Chang, author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes On the World, and one of the foremost experts on the Korean Peninsula in the United States. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right. Let's talk to Judy Palak about what's coming up at the top of the hour.
Then there is this. Tune into the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow at 6 a.m. for a special All Royal Wedding.
Ooh.
Top 6 at 6.
Oh!
It's time for the Royal Wedding. Oh, is jolly good.
Is Queen Elizabeth going to this thing,
of
by the way?
Of course she is. How would she not go?
I don't know. She's old.
Still makes it out.
I don't. She makes it. She's not
she does. She went to go visit the royal baby last week.
The royal baby.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
She picked some flowers in the garden.
Is Prince Philip going to make it?
He hasn't been well either.
No.
No. Well, that's
all
a
right.
That's a
I wouldn't question. Want anybody to break a hip.
But
here.
Hey, Northwestern grad marrying the prince. Go Cats.
All right. Never thought of it that way, but yeah, okay.
Well, it's one way to look at it.
All right.
We are the home of the Cats.
Okay.
Thank you.
I like it. I wanted to have some rooting interest in this, and I've not found one.
Is she wearing purple?
That would be good. Oh, it's a very royal color, isn't it? All right, wait a second. I got to hold on. I got to get this in before we get to Judy's news.
I'm older. I'm wiser. This, essentially a Google. Ask me anything. Turn off your Google. You're scaring me.
I think my Google scared Jack last night.
Oh, my God.
But in a good way. Like when you intentionally go through a haunted house.
Ew!
Oh,
OMG.
Oh. Richard Roper is here. He's got some reviewing to do. And yep. That was Life of the Party. Melissa McCarthy, Jillian Jacobs, Maya Rudolph.
Oh, yeah,
you know, you
good
cannot,
cast.
You know, when that Maya Rudolph and Melissa McCarthy get together.
Watch out.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
Bridesmaids.
I agree. It is good. You know, this movie, Life of the Party, Melissa McCarthy, she's been... That about a 6 or 7 year run where she's gone to the next level after the sitcoms and stuff where she's getting feature roles. And it's been kind of a roller coaster, some really good roles and then a few where it felt like, okay, we've seen this before. And this definitely feels that way. Life of the Party, she plays a woman in her 40s. Her daughter's a senior in college. Her jerky husband leaves her and she decides to go back to college because she had to leave a year early because she got pregnant with the daughter who's now a senior. So, of course, she's going to go to the same school that her daughter goes to, which, of course, was a movie called Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield in 1986.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, there's a charm to this movie and to Melissa McCarthy that really saves the day. And what I liked about it was... It goes in directions you don't expect. You know, when the first time she comes into the sorority house where her daughter is, and, you know, the mom's wearing, you know, she's got all the Decatur University. It's one of those great fictional schools. I love when they have, you know, like Faber College and stuff where they just, Decatur U, you know, just, okay. So, you know, Melissa McCarthy as the mom shows up and she's got the sweater and the pom poms and, you know, and everything. And you see the beautiful sorority sisters, you know, who live with her daughter, and you think they're all going to be just like, you know, appalled, but they love her, which is just awesome. Like the greatest looking girl in the sorority. Who looks like a supermodel that just walked off the runway, who you think would be like, oh my God, your mother. She's like, I love your mom so much. And they take her in, much to the chagrin of the daughter,
yeah,
which is kind of fun.
Kind of get that, yeah.
And then there's a romance with a younger guy that's not just the usual played for laughs. The younger guy really, really likes her. I mean, he really has a thing for her, and it's kind of endearing. And you mentioned Maya Rudolph. The supporting cast is terrific. And so it's really, it's a silly romp. You know kind of where it's going to go, but then, you know, it has these little twists and turns that make it a little funnier to me. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, you know what's going to happen with this. You could run to the theater and see it with your mom, or you could catch it on an airplane, or you could watch it on home video, and you know you're going to have it's a good time. It's a three-star, solid three-star movie.
How
for
cool.
Life of the Party.
Fun and lights, and we need some of that,
you know,
right,
that's
now.
That's what I kind of felt, and I felt like, you know, sometimes really there's more than, I mean, we review the movies for the movies, but sometimes it's like, you know, sometimes we just need these fun escapist comedies. Even the superhero movies sometimes get pretty dark, you know. It's like,
right,
oh my
true.
God, they killed Spider-Man, or whatever. So,
wait, spoiler alert!
You know, all of a sudden Superman's, you know, there's dirt on Superman's grave, and Wonder Woman's burying her boyfriend. It's like the superhero movies have become like the Disney movies of our time, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of fun, and there's, you know.
Is the writing good? Like,
the
jokes
are
funny?
Yeah, and it's actually Ben Falcone, who's her husband, who's a very funny guy, is the director.
He was in Bridesmaids.
And she wrote this with him. So, you know, I think, you know, they had a lot of fun with it. And she's such a winning presence. You want her to be your mom. You know, you could understand that. And you know there's going to be an 80s theme party so she can have a dance off. You know there's going to be things like that, right?
Does she have the full 80s hair and everything?
Yeah, all of that stuff.
Good.
Yeah,
no,
and it's well done and mild
she's
humor.
She's an
American
treasure. So
Chicago treasure.
Yeah. She is. She's amazing. Yeah. She's got that, like you said, she's got that the winning charm, you know. There's something about her that you just can't, you know, she's likable in everything she does. I'm very, very glad that they haven't like tried to make a dark, like dramatic turn for her, because, you know, there's, you know, somewhere in Hollywood there is a manager or an agent. There's
you know what
we need to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But honey, baby, darling, dolly, booby, listen, we're going to have to show you real acting chops.
You know,
we need
true.
To get you an Oscar.
We're going to remake Sybil. You're going to have 16 personalities. You're going to go for it. You know, you're going to be a cutter. It's going to be amazing.
But Richard Roper, by the way, is brought to you by Arkadeck.
Thank you, Arkadeck.
You're
we
welcome.
Appreciate that. Yes. I just love that. Like the first time she goes to class, and there are two, you know, catty girls who turn around and say something mean, and she just says in a very sly way, "Oh, we're still doing this. Where young women are going after young women. We're still 20 years later. We haven't learned." You know, just that kind of sly commentary on that kind of thing. So it's actually very smart for what it wants to be, and then just silly and goofy and fun.
Good.
So
good.
Enjoy Life of
I'm
the Party.
I'm going to see that one.
Yeah,
I need silly and goofy
you know,
and fun.
It's get the Chardonnay, you know, at the little bar outside the theater or something like
Chardonnay
that.
Chardonnay all day.
Melissa McCarthy in Misery 2.
It's going to, oh my God, with Scott Conn in the role that James Conn made.
Oh no.
Listen, Mr. Man, I'm going to make you some split pea soup, and then we're going to call the authorities because you've been in an accident. It's a shorter movie. That'd be fantastic.
All right. You know what we're going to do here? Let's stop. Okay. Let's get all the information that's fit to print, and then we'll come back. Gabriel Union is in a new film called Breaking In, and Terminal with Margot Robbie and Mike Myers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's interesting. Myers.
Yeah. Wait to hear about
he's
that
back.
One.
Now, wait a second. This is a dramatic movie, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
This so is now, not the one you take your mom to.
So, Austin Powell, what happened there?
Well, he's doing that dramatic turn
doing
that
dramatic
described.
Turn you just talked about.
Bubby
Jolly Sweet.
You did Austin Powers.
Listen, everybody loves you, Austin Powers. By the way, you killed it as Trump's doctor on Conan. But then again, you got killed by Marty Short doing it a couple nights later, and no one could tell the difference between the two of you. So here's really the deal. Here's the deal. We're going to have to do a very serious film.
Imagine there are bodies under the floorboards in Wayne's basement. Okay, that's where we're going to start with this.
Oh,
God.
Was that really?
Oh, God. All right, that's coming up. That's coming up. And I know you can't say yet, but you just saw the Deadpool 2. Did you not? You just came from that, didn't you?
Ooh. I'll tell you what, if we stick around, I know we're going to talk some more movies. Maybe in the 6:30 hour, I'll give you one little spoiler about Deadpool 2. I'll tell you one thing about it that's going to get people
not the
even
review
more excited.
Yet.
No, not at all.
Okay.
But something very cool about the movie.
All right. Okay. Because I think that's the one that a lot of people are looking forward to.
Oh, yeah. Huge movie next week. Right. Huge.
Okay. All right. Stand by. Right now, here's Violetta with the WGN Traffic Travel Spots.
And then there is this we want to tell you about. Fly to the front of the line. LitFest, June 9th, June 10th. With a Fest Pass, get yours before they're gone. Printers Row, litfest.org/FestPass.
True Roper is here. The Row Con Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
All right. Let us now. He's going to give us a little preview of something here coming up about Deadpool for all the for all of the comic book geekologists out there.
Mm.
We're going to give you a little bit. He just saw it a few minutes ago, so he'll give you a little something, but that's coming up. Okay. All right, so Life at the Party with Melissa McCarthy, you gave it 3 stars.
Yes.
You like that. Even though it's back to school with Melissa McCarthy, you thought it was great, fun, has heart. Breaking In with Gabriel Union.
Now, Breaking In is the classic protective mom movie. Gabriel Union is the mother of 2 young children. Her father was some sort of career criminal, and he gets killed. So now she's taking the kids up to the compound in Wisconsin that Dad had, and it's one of those safe houses. You know, he's outfitted it with video cameras and security monitors and the walls that close and all that stuff because he was a bad guy. So they go up there. They're going to go up there, kind of close the house and maybe, you know, put it on the market. But the bad guys are already there looking for the $4 million that's somewhere in the safe. And they didn't know that the daughter and the grandkids were going to be there.
Oh boy.
So now we've got the classic, you know, panic room type movie where, you know, you've got the crew is fantastic. I love the crew in this movie, the bad guys. Billy Burke, you might remember him. He was Twilight's dad, Kristen Stewart's dad in Twilight. Mr. Twilight, you know. He was actually a terrific actor. So he's like the head guy. He's the brains of the operation, right? And then you've got one guy who's the young kid who's got the bleach blonde hair and kind of has the nervous tics because he's probably doing the tweaking. And he just thought it was going to be a break-in. And now all of a sudden they're talking about killing, you know, mom and the daughters because the daughter and the son. And he always says the famous line, nobody said we were talking about killing anybody. This was supposed to be a simple robbery. And then you got the psychopath who always has to utter the line, they've seen our faces. There's nothing we could do about it now. They've seen our faces. They have to die. And then the techno guy who's going to break into the safe. Those are the 4 crew members.
Okay.
So Gabrielle Union is terrific in this, playing that mom. You know, she gets to say, you messed with the wrong mom, which Halle Berry got to say 3 months ago in Kidnapped when she said you messed with the wrong mom. There's no right mom to mess with. What mom? You know, every mom who
protects their children.
So this moves along at like 87 minutes. It knows exactly what it is. It's going to be a movie where, you know, mom's going to use all kinds of clever ways to protect her kids, and the kids are going to end up crawling through the, you know, the crawl spaces, and the bad guys are going to, you know, try to get them. And then, of course, there's always the friend, the best friend or the realtor who shows up, you know, unannounced in the driveway and knocks on the door, and the bad guy answers the door, and she's like, oh, where is Sean here? And he's like, oh, she just went out. And then she sees like Sean's purse in the background and says, I think I should come in. You're like, oh, well, you're dead, you know, you're a nosy realtor. You know, there's always that. It's always like, oh, gosh, you're going to play. And that's not a spoiler alert. Everything in this movie you can see coming. But I'm also giving it 3 stars because this is
this is
a film. It's really well shot. You know, it's well photographed and very well acted. And it's not trying to be anything more then pure escape is fair, where you get to root, you know, you get to cheer when, you know, one bad guy after another, you know, may or may not meet their demise.
And
you know, the bratty teen sister who always picks on her younger brother, of course, goes into full protective mode. And, you know, mom does everything she can to protect her kids. And, you know, and the bad guys get to say things like, "You're nothing but a woman against four men. What are you going to do?" You know, and then,
watch out.
They're not only killers and felons, they're sexist.
And Empire fans will like the daughter here, right, is played by one of Empire actresses, Adriana Alexis.
Terrific. Terrific. Yeah. She's going to be a young actress. Yeah. Absolutely. And all the, you know, the stock characters, everybody plays it, you know, pretty darn well. So you kind of know going in, this is what this is. It's not going to get nominated. No one's you know, setting the alarm early next February on that Tuesday morning when they announce the nomination. But that Gabrielle Union,
she's one of the great overlooks by the Academy.
And, you know, she's, you know, 20 some years past Bring It On, and she still looks great. Yeah. And is a, you know, a very likable performer, very likable
Mrs.
actress.
D. Wade.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, how about a mom playing what normally the buff superhero type guy would play? Like, you know, like you would think this role isn't always played by the mom.
Yeah,
it's just kinda, the regular mom.
They do the convenient thing where dad is away on business, you know, so he calls, "I wish I could be there, baby, but I'm going to be gone all weekend." So, you know, so that gets him out of the picture. And it's just mom and the two kids in the house.
Terminal.
And then Terminal is, okay, so Margot Robbie.
Explain this.
This is a very weird, strange, lurid, it's kind of Guy Ritchie meets Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm. Almost all of it is set in a train station terminal. It's very stylized looking. And Margot Robbie is a waitress who has revenge on her mind. And all these men try to outsmart her. And boy, that's a bad idea. Oh. And Mike Myers plays a character known as the janitor. And he's almost unrecognizable beneath, like, the prosthetics and everything. But let's just say the janitor does more than cleanups on aisle one, if you know what I mean. And
we do.
And if you stick around long enough, and I like this one, I'm giving this one 3 stars as well. You get to see Margot Robbie, and she gets to play a dual role. Everybody wants to play a dual role at least once in their movie career, right? Mm-hmm. Where we find out, oh my gosh, there's two of her, and there's two Margot Robbies. That's pretty great.
Two for the price of one.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, well,
is she great in this?
She's good in it. It's her production company, I think, one of their first efforts. You know, she's clearly trying to do something different. It's really bloody. It's a little bit silly. It's over the top. I think, you know, some people after 15 minutes will be like, "I'm not sticking around with this." But I think it gets so crazy at the end. It's fantastic.
Really?
In a kind of B movie way, where it wants to be The Usual Suspects or something like that, and you don't really buy it, but it's kind of great that they tried for that type of thing. Like, wait until you see the twist on top of the twist on top of the other twist.
Is it
creepy and violent?
Yeah,
bloody?
I mean, yes. Just Mike Myers. I love Mike Myers, and I don't know what to do with Mike Myers because I'm starting to feel like I would like to see another Austin Powers movie out of him. I would like to see something that, you know, takes me in a different direction. And I don't need to see him play Wayne's World because he's like Wayne's grandfather now. We don't need that. But there's so much, especially now, there's plenty of room for great irony here.
Yes. I would say this isn't going to be the role.
What happened?
Does he play like a sinister evil character?
Maybe. I feel like it's like something Jim Carrey passed on. When, you know, because he likes to do those dark roles a lot. And I feel like he said, "Ah, nah, not doing this." And Mike Myers, "Oh, I'll give it a try."
Listen, Carrey passed. You're in.
I will say this. It's not like you don't believe him as this, you know, this creepy janitor who has a very dark past. It's not like you go, "Oh, this is Mike Myers. It takes me out of the movie." He's very good at playing this particular scumbag.
And Jeremy Irons' kid is in it. There's an Irons in this.
Yeah.
Who knew? And, now we have to start showing up for kids, for grandkids, kids and grandkids now.
All the kids are acting now.
Yeah.
And Simon Pegg, who's been in a lot of fun movies, British actor. It's a good cast.
I don't know what to.
I'm not sure what to make of that either.
Okay, so you like it though? You gave 3 stars
again.
You got three recommendations here.
All these films are of a certain genre. They don't break any new ground, but they do a nice job of being the type of film they're trying to be.
All right. Okay. There you go.
And at the end of Deadpool. No, I'm kidding.
Life of the Party, Breaking In, and Terminal. A Deadpool hint coming up.
Yeah.
And the other side of Judy Palak's News, which is in two. Yeah. Rokhan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Yes. Richard Roper is here. He's just reviewing some films for us.
Should mention the president is in Elkhart, Indiana at the moment, wowing the crowds by saying, I got in at 4:30 in the morning. Somebody said, that's okay. You can cancel Indiana tonight. And he said, no way. You don't know the people of Indiana. And got everyone going at the rally.
You know, whatever it is, you have to give him, I don't know if it's credit or his due, the man does not sleep much. I mean, he's off.
Think about that schedule. You're right.
And he's always been that way from people that are close to him, right? He's always been up real early and up late at night and having those Diet Cokes, cheeseburgers.
I was up last night watching this. You know, I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning watching the
plane come in.
He and Pence heading over to Andrews, separate helicopters. I mean, he does travel pretty. He could sleep on the plane if he wanted to. It's you know, like I don't sleep a lot of planes, but if you had your own bed and shower,
that's true.
Air Force One.
It's not as nice as the plane he had to give up, though. The Trump plane. With the gold-plated fixtures.
I suppose that's true. All right, well, it's very interesting. He's in full campaign mode. What I'll tell you, the most shocking part of the show, a lot of shocking things happened today on the show. First of all, that Terminal got 3 stars from Richard Roper. That's the first most shocking thing.
I was surprised by that. I was myself.
But Gordon Chang was on with us, and he's the author of Nuclear Showdown.
Sure.
And he's one of the foremost experts on North Korea.
Yeah.
And we know what the United States wants, which is denuclearization. But what does Kim Jong-un want? And he explained it. He wants unification with the South, and he wants the capital of Korea to be the leader and it in Pyongyang. Now,
there's some problems with that.
Well, I think there's some problems with that. But as Gordon explained, the president of South Korea is kind of with him on it.
Wow.
The president of South Korea is like, he's got people in his cabinet. Because you remember, the president of South Korea is replacing a woman who was indicted South Korea. So there's great political upheaval there. And that there are these people, these are the pro-communist socialist, whatever you want to call this, crazy commo fascist regime of North Korea, that are in favor of that and for unification. And I'm thinking, you're going to hand over to a megalomaniac, a guy who tortures his own people, blows up his own family with anti-aircraft artillery. You're going to hand over one of the most sophisticated and successful economies in the world?
Did you ask the South Koreans what they thought about this?
I mean, what are they talking about? And now I'm going to have to watch on June 12th. That's going to be the most shocking rose ceremony of all, because I'm like, wait a second. What if Trump goes, okay, go ahead, you can have that. I don't really care.
He doesn't.
It's
like, when you used to play the game of Risk and you had to change the names of the countries.
What happens then?
It's just Korea.
Yeah, I mean, that's baffling.
I
don't think the United States is going to stand for that, are they? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. All right. But, you know, on a more comedic vein, you saw Deadpool right before you came here.
Deadpool 2, which will be in theaters next week.
Highly anticipated.
Yeah, I think the sequel will do even better, because that Ryan Reynolds knows how to sell the heck out of a movie. He's right up there with Robert Downey Jr., I think, in terms of like just, you know, he's out there you see that character all the time and doing different things, you know, either charity things or events or whatever the case may be. So you know, he keeps Deadpool on the conscience of America. And, you know, the Deadpool character is interesting, too, because that's an R-rated movie. You know, they don't hedge their bets with that one. You know, it's very bloody and very dirty and very irreverent. And kind of, again, like we were talking, like Anna was saying, sometimes the time is right for that. Because, look, the Avengers Infinity War was great. Black Panther was amazing. You know, we've had these great epic movies, but they're pretty serious. They have their moments of humor, but this one is very wink at the camera. There's all kinds of references. And we'll get into the review next week. But I will say this for the fans out there that love to sit through the closing credits for the Easter eggs, as they call them now. You know, the little scenes that sometimes hint at the third chapter in the movie, or just have a kind of a winking comment, or let us know that somebody new might be showing up. Deadpool 2 has what I believe it to be the single greatest credits scene since they've started doing those. And I don't want to say anything more. I want people to enjoy it.
Even better than Austin Powers. Now that I move back into this Mike Myers moment, because the Austin Powers, they go to the funeral of the henchman that get killed in the movie.
Yeah, then no one thinks about the henchman's wife, which is brilliant, too. It's right up there with that.
All right.
I mean, it's something where you're like, wow, that they did it, that everybody was on board for it, and that they actually let it be in there is just fantastic. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right.
Stick around
what you've basically said, I don't want to get ahead of your review, but it's probably worth the price of admission just for that.
I would say so. And I would never, advocate sneaking from one theater to the next. But let's say you're seeing Life of the Party with Melissa McCarthy next week. Yeah. Don't do that. That's
all
wrong.
Right.
That would be wrong.
Hey, by the way,
arrested if you do that.
Yeah. Congratulations to Richard Roper.
What happened?
Richard Roper, his review of Black Panther is the very top of the Black Panther DVD box. It's there at the very top of the DVD. That's it's your headline. Now, there's good news and bad news here.
Okay, well, what does he say?
I have it right here. Hold on. I have it. What it says here, it's a Black Panther. It's a really cool.
It is.
Yeah, it's very cool.
The DVD.
And there's only
awesome.
One quote on the front of the DVD, so that's cool, right?
One of the best superhero movies of the century, it says.
Cool. Yeah, very nice.
I did write that. I wrote that.
And it's like right at the top in big letters.
Yeah,
almost as big as the Black Panther letters for the thing of the best. So it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
And then in what can only be described as the line of the eye test that you're taking.
That no one can read.
And you stop and you look at it and you go, who can read that?
Why did they even put that up there?
Why would they do that?
That doesn't belong there. That's just crazy.
It's the
people.
Smallest I've ever seen my name. In fact, I found out about that just getting the the mass mailing they were sending out to sell the thing. And I'm like, oh, Black Panther's going to be out. Yeah, I wonder what kind of extras will be on there. And I saw that. I'm like, I think I said that. And then they kept doing that thing where you touch your screen on your phone and you keep spreading the fingers apart so you can make it zoom 3, 4. Mm-hmm. 7, 9, and then by then it was just like it's the tinies. I've had a couple friends that are now calling me tiny font because it's like there's no font
well,
that's small.
You need superhero powers to read it. It's
I'm like, oh,
you
man.
Sent it to us this morning and I could not find
it. It's very, it's fine, but it's kind of funny because it's like you almost don't even put the name there. Like,
they should put the name there. You know what? The fact that your words.
Yes.
Your words lead the top. I mean, they're very effusive words, but that your words lead the top of the DVD box of probably. Listen, this deal is good. This film is a $3 billion film by the time it is all said and done, right?
That is true.
And so video release and, which I did not realize. We learned this a couple of weeks ago talking to people in the film business.
Yes, in the industry.
That theatrical release and video release are two different companies. I always thought it was like the same company and you do like, they cut a deal. And quite honestly, the producers of the films and the studios do not care about the video release.
That's
wouldn't you want to care about the video release? Think of the money or the television rights.
Yeah, it's weird.
Think of the money that these films, I mean, I know it's less, but the money that they continue. I mean, I'm telling you, are you telling me that Godfather doesn't make money and it's reruns and reruns and reruns?
Somebody's getting checks.
Yeah.
Somewhere somebody's getting checks for all those movies. But yeah, it's always so complex because it'll be like, something in association with this entertainment, and then it's just distributed by somebody else and all the different rights. It's tough to keep track of. But yeah, and people still love, the home releases. I mean, there's a lot of folks, who are very busy and they're working, they got kids, and
even if
when I tell them I love a movie, they're like, that's great, I cannot wait for it to come out on home video. And I get that. It's a major effort and a big expense. I got a bottle of water at the movies the other day.
Mm-hmm.
The Dasani is the water. And it was $6.49 for a bottle, bottle of water. Now, my guess is you could get a six-pack of Dasani for close to that at the grocery store. I'm not good with the prices. I'm like George H.W. Bush with the scanner.
Isn't that kind of self-defeating that people aren't going to want to see movies if they're going to have to do that?
I was like $6 for just the bottle of water. I had I think I had a $5 in my hand. I was like, oh, I'll take the $2 change. He's like, you owe me $7. I'll give you some change. And this is why, and again, we wouldn't advocate this, but this is why a lot of people.
Money, $12 for popcorn, and popcorn is air. They are selling you air.
Absolutely.
And seeds.
And this is why a lot of people, you'll see them bring out the snack bags once the lights go down.
Oh,
they bring in their own stuff. You can't really begrudge a family. know, to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But don't do peanut butter because that stinks. Like sometimes people take out stuff. Like, oh, would you like it? Would you like some tuna fish? Like, no. Like,
don't eat that here. Come on.
No, I don't want tuna fish. Don't do that.
No, I brought some bibimbap. Anybody?
Yeah, that's not good.
All right.
Some curry, Indian curry.
Oh, God.
All right. Hey, you know what? Our guys put together a list here. Wait, how much time do I have left here? I got to figure this out.
Not a lot. Not a lot. All right.
Of the best mom movies of all times. Best mothers in
movie moms.
Films. Yeah, movie moms.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting because there's two from this year. From the Oscars this year.
Huh.
Frances McDormand and Allison Janney.
Wow.
Ah, yeah.
So we're not necessarily always going with the best in terms of like great mothers. It's a great characters. So in other words, right?
Because yes. Right. Allison Janney is not. Yeah. There's a moment. There's a speech in I, Tonya where she explains exactly what it is that she has done here, and I think that Tonya Harding should have listened.
Well, she turned out great, Tonya.
Did you? I mean, when I was a kid, did you ever love me or anything?
You think Sonia Henie's mother loved her? Poor you. I didn't stay home making apple brown Bettys. No, I made you a champion. Knowing you'd hate me for it. That's the sacrifice a mother makes. I wish I had a mother like me instead of nice. Nice gets you shit. I didn't like my mother either. So what? I gave you a gift.
He cursed me.
Oh, wow. I didn't see the movie. That's powerful.
It's about right. I think it's about right. The movie is not all that. The movie is actually incredibly entertaining.
It's a lot of dark humor in
there. Yeah, it's funny but that is the moment where it kind of takes you in a different.
Ooh.
That's when she won the Oscar. That scene, Allison Janney.
Well, also she acted with a parrot too. That was the other
she
piece.
Did? Yeah, they had a pet parrot.
There was a parrot on her shoulder the whole time. And as it turns out, in the Easter eggs at the end of the movie, they showed the pictures of the real people. And the real Tonya Harding mom. Did do an interview with a parrot on her shoulder.
Gosh, so weird.
Not since Robert Blake and Beretta have you seen a parrot put to such dramatic use.
All right. let's we'll find out what's coming up. Let's see. Martier, why don't you tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour?